The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 104 for Sunday, May 20th, 2007.
Folks, and welcome to the Mac Geek Gab. I am Dave. I'm here with John, and we're back. Though we didn't really, well, we went away last week, but of course there was the interview show that we put out just to keep things moving along. How are you, John?
Not too bad.
That's good.
Did vacation. Unfortunately, I got sick while I was on vacation. That's never fun, but I blame Florida.
Always good to blame the good
state
of Florida.
Well, no, that's right. Well, they had a when I was there, they went to Orlando with Josh and Abby and Zach. That's some fun.
Yeah,
their new kid. But it was funny because we were landing and they said, "Okay, if you smell burning, it's not the plane; it's the forest fire." It's because if you've been checking the news, they had some pretty. And actually, at times, even in Orlando, you could smell the smoke.
Hmm.
So. Probably based on the horrible air quality and all the sick people on the plane, physically sick, got a little something, which actually makes my voice sound a little bassier.
It does. Yeah. It kind of freaked me out. When anyway, sound
so I'm going to get over. Yeah. Yeah. That killed your EQ session there or made it interesting.
Right. It did. Yeah. Kept me on my toes.
But we're back and boy, it's great to be back.
Yeah. I was down in Austin last week doing a bunch of things, brought on a new sales rep for Backbeat Media. She actually starts tomorrow, Tony Nelson Herrera. And, she's going to work out swimmingly. I'm very, very happy. And got together.
Swimmingly? You did the initiation then.
We did. Yeah. Jeff and I got together with her a couple times. And
phase one.
That's right. Phase one. Yeah. No, she's going to be an excellent addition to the team. So very, very happy to have her on board. And got together with some old friends and stayed with an old friend. And if you looked at my blog, you saw that I had a early morning encounter with a scorpion. So... And we'll leave it at that. Anyway, so we have all kinds of stuff to get through today. Today will be a listener mail show. Now, you notice I didn't say reader mail, John. I've gotten better, I believe, over the years we've been doing this. We're almost at 2 years.
Yeah, just watch that control panel.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Thanks. Appreciate that. So talking about airport stuff, especially Airport Extreme, some more digital audio stuff. A little bit about FileMaker, all kinds of stuff. Remember, feedback at MacGeekGab.com or 206-666-GEEK is where you can send in your questions, concerns, comments, tips, corrections.
Or call in.
Well, that's, yeah.
And it's 4335.
That's two, yes. GEEK would be 4335. Unless you turn your phone upside down, but then you'll get somebody else. Wait, it'd still be the same. Never mind. Are we ready here? I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I am now. Do you like how I bought a little time there? Robert writes in, "Hi guys, after a restart, sometimes my router assigns me a different local IP address than previously, such as 192.168.1.102. I need to know this number when it changes when I'm away from my computer. Is there a way to have my Mac automatically email this number to me after restart?" I'm going to actually take this in a different direction. I'm sure there is a way to have your Mac email it to you. In fact, you could have a little Apple script that fires up every time your computer starts up and just emails you your IP address regardless of what it is. And then, you know, you could probably even make it fancier and have it save it to a file. And then if it, you know, matches what's in the file, don't send the email. Otherwise, let it, you know, let it rip. However, it's a pain to have your email address. It is a pain to have your email address change every time you restart. Thankfully, that's not Robert's problem. His problem is that it's his IP address changes, and that too can be a bit of a problem. Especially, I'm assuming he has some things forwarded to it from his router, etc. So, I do the same thing. I have the same kind of issues here, and I don't want my Mac's IP addresses changing. So, I do statically assigned IP addresses. And what I first do is you're going to want to look in the airport admin utility and check to see what range of IP addresses it's distributing. So in Robert's example, 192.168.1.x is the range of IP addresses, and X ranges from 2 to 255 or 1 to 255. That's what you're allowed to have. Now, the router always grabs .1, at least in most cases. And then by default, airport routers distribute .2 to .200. So that leaves .201 to .254 as available addresses, but not going to be auto-assigned by the router. So my advice would be to do one of two things. And I know, John, you've got something to add here. You would either, one, go into your network system preference, not control panel, and assign an address that is outside of that range, selecting manually Ethernet address assigned manually. But then you have to fill in the router, which in this case would be 192.168.1.1, and the subnet mask, which would be 255.255.255.0, and the DNS server, which I believe would also be 192.168.1.1, because the router is going to do some DNS games for us. That's one way of doing it. The other way would be to set DHCP with a manually assigned address. So if you set DHCP to 192.168.1.201 and then the rest there, I think that might work, but it all depends on how the router deals with things. So that's my, that's actually my 4 cents there.
4 cents?
Yeah, you know, hey, I like to give it my all.
And that's a good set of answers there. Now the answer I'm going to give is not a complete answer, but just the pointer in the right direction, because I've run into this in the enterprise realm. There are ways, and actually at work, when we do have machines, so pretty much nobody is allowed to statically assign an address, as Dave was talking about earlier, because especially in a corporate environment, that just leads to chaos.
Okay.
And actually, that happened the other day. Is one of my coworkers, who's a Mac person, kept getting a message saying this address is already taken, and he was on DHCP. And I'm like, huh? So we called our network support, and eventually we had our local guy come down, and he's like, hey, guess what? Somebody statically assigned that address. It's like, so this
not
is
good.
Why you don't want, typically in a corporate environment, people assigning their own static IP address. In a small environment, that's great because everybody probably knows everybody, and you know what addresses each person has.
Sure.
But in our place, what we do is either we give the and then this gets into the guts of router admin. You either give them your MAC address, because when you do a DHCP, potentially the router can look at the MAC address, and if you say MAC address being the hardware address of your network adapter, you can say, oh, I know who you are. Let me give you this address. So it's kind of a reserved DHCP, in that every time you go to the DHCP server, if you have that MAC address, you will always get the same address back. Now, in the case I just mentioned, what happened, was someone took that address. The other thing you could do is that in DHCP, there's something called the client ID.
Okay.
Where if you look in the system preferences, you will see that field, and you probably wondered, what the heck is that? Well, that's another mechanism. If for whatever reason you don't want to use the MAC address of the person to tie them to an IP address via DHCP, you can use the client ID, which is another way. It says, oh, your client ID, whatever, and your admin would typically give that to you. It will come back again and give you a DHCP address that is kind of dynamic, but not really, because it's tied to that ID. So a number of ways to solve that problem.
Yep. That makes sense.
And I think you and I pretty much covered all.
All right. There you go. Jim writes, got a problem for the two of you to solve. While most of my machines are Mac, I also have a couple of desktop PCs, which I have built. Both are running Windows, XP, and Linux. I recently did a dual install of Vista Home Premium to see what or how bad it is. I also installed the new Airport Extreme, which I love. Here's the problem. All my machines connect with no problem to the internet, with the exception of Vista. OS X, Linux, Windows XP all connect without a hitch. Vista does not. Here's my setup. I'm using two Linksys switches, and they're connected to the Airport Extreme and then to my cable modem. I was on the phone with Microsoft for about an hour and a half, and they finally said, must be an Apple problem. Probably the Airport Extreme is not compatible with Vista. I can't believe that one. Any ideas? Okay. Now, I do have a couple of ideas. One is assuming you're connected wirelessly, which you may or may not be. If you are, I always would recommend disabling security temporarily to troubleshoot, because at least that lets you know, okay, look, yeah, maybe there's something with Vista's implementation of WPA2 versus Airport Extreme's implementation, et cetera, that might be the issue. If you're connected hardwired, then referring back to the answers that John and I just gave here with managing IP addresses, assign a static IP to the Vista machine and statically assign the router address, go through the whole thing and see if that does it. Because if it's a DHCP issue, there might be there shouldn't be, but there might be something with the way your Linksys switches are working and the way Vista is trying to pass. It's all standard. It should all just work, but who knows, you know, and then maybe if assigning statically works, okay, now get your Linksys switches out of the way and plug directly into the Airport Extreme, try DHCP there and troubleshoot it down. So any other thoughts, John?
The one thought would be the question was a bit unclear as to exactly what is meant by not connecting.
Oh, good point.
I mean, are they getting, and sometimes, like, for example, are you getting a, I'm trying to think what the proper name is, but there's
link light, you mean?
No. When you try to get a DHCP address, I'm going to assume there's an attempt to get a DHCP address, and not connecting means they're not getting an address. Usually what will happen if DHCP fails, you'll get a 169 address, right?
Right, yeah, 169.254.
Which is a locally routable address, but the secret thing it's saying is, I tried to get DHCP. Typically, when you try to get DHCP and it fails for whatever reason, you get a 169.something address, which is a sign to you that the router or the DHCP server is, for whatever reason, doesn't want to give you an address. So that could be one thing to look at. If you're getting a 169 address, you know, double check your network settings, your DHCP settings.
That's true. That's a good place to start. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't know, because to me the term not connecting is unclear. Getting a valid IP address or not? If you are, then, well, yeah, but I'm with you. Turning off firewalls, security, any other stuff like that, which sometimes blocks outgoing requests, would be another good thing to check. Temporarily, yep. Of course, because you probably always want to run a firewall.
That's true. Yeah, it could be the firewall. Yeah.
Or antivirus, for example, the one that we use, McAfee, actually has sometimes, which is surprising, it does have some rules that will block, usually not, you know, address granting, but like SMTP and mail and stuff like that. But it could be blocking other things.
Well, that's a good point, because it might be allowing the DHCP traffic, but if it's blocking, if the antivirus or internet security or whatever it is that's out there is blocking connection to addresses in that range, it'll allow the DHCP. But then once you've got an address, it's not going to let you talk to the router, and then you're done. So that's actually an excellent point. And I bet you're right.
The Windows usually warns you when, maybe not. It may be buried.
Windows does, but like Norton.
I got to admit, I haven't done a heck of a lot of Vista, seeing some demos, and it kind of looks pretty.
Norton Internet Security certainly doesn't, because I've seen instances where you're tearing your hair out, and then finally you're like, wait a minute, disable Norton Internet Security, and bam, it works. Like, okay, so you got to go in and, you know, either remove the rule that's blocking it or create a hole to allow it through. So
among that potpourri of suggestions, I'm sure there's something.
There's got to be an answer in there. You know, last week I was down and I stayed with a buddy, my friend Layton. And while I was down there, we realized he had gotten a new MacBook Pro, and we were both noticing, because I was using my older MacBook Pro, and it just seemed like internet access was weird. It was slow, and I did a speed test, and I saw, wow, he's getting 6 megabits down and about 384K up. Like, you know, web surfing's not snappy. And then the next day I checked his router, and it hit me like, oh, he's got an old 11, you know, 802.11b router. So maximum 11 megabits, but
10 megabits, right? 11.
But
right,
yeah,
right.
But really not. It's 5.5. Right. So his internet connection on the downstream, if you were trying to get a web page, was slowing down, was soaking up all of the bandwidth of the wireless, and not allowing, you know, the acknowledgement packets out upstream. And that was slowing things down.
Why is he on B?
Well, that's what he had. I mean, he had this thing for years, and it was fine, but now it's not.
Works.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so
he's got to get G action there.
Well, now he's got N, because he replaced it with an Airport Extreme while I was there.
And excellent.
So there's a couple things that I noticed about the Airport Extreme. One, that it's fast, right? Especially when you're connecting N. It's great.
Now you have N on your portable, right?
No, I don't. I have the first,
you had
first
the
gen. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I thought there were tricks to get that to work.
No, not on mine. The Core 2 Duo machines, you can make it work, but not on the...
Okay.
You can make it work on mine, but I have to replace the card.
Okay. But you get down to G, which is 54 megabits,
yeah,
right?
So that's 27 and a half. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right.
So that was cool. And then what that meant was I got to play with the new Airport Extreme software, the airport admin utility, the new airport admin software, or airport utility, I guess is the name of it. And that's really cool. It's so much slicker and smoother than the old airport software. And the cool thing is it actually allows me to manage my older base station here at home now that it's installed on my MacBook, which is a nice little perk. But here's the thing, right? It's connecting at, in theory, 104 megabits. And actually, sometimes you even get speeds like that wirelessly.
Really?
Yeah. But
not the half.
It's half not the usually, half. Yeah.
With handshaking and all that stuff, you usually... Wow.
Yeah. But here's the rub. So it's got a USB port on it, right? And unlike the older base stations, this USB port, as we all know, can be used not only for printers, but for hard drives. And you can even hang a USB switch off of it, and or a USB hub, USB 2 hub, and have both, right? So I thought, and he was trying to share his music collection between his G5, which was hardwired, and this laptop. And I thought, well, wait a minute. You know, he's hanging the drive off the G5 anyway and connecting to it over the network. And I thought, okay, well, why don't we just hang the drive off the base station, have the G5 connect Ethernet, and then have the MacBook Pro connect wirelessly, and it won't matter. Well, the problem is, yes, it's a USB 2 port on there, which in theory goes about 480. We saw about 300 megabits transferring to the drive from the G5. So presumably the drive will get 300 on the base station. But the base station's Ethernet ports are maxed out at 100 megabit, which means you can actually get faster access to the base station wirelessly, a little bit, you know, a couple of megabits faster than you can. Yeah, it's not gigabit, and it's not
gigabit.
No,
yes,
it sucks. So yeah, so there we were with this drive that should be able to go, should be able to realize its full speeds over the network and really do this right. And the Ethernet ports were limiting it. Now, presumably that's because maybe cost, I don't know. I mean, the thing's $180. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a bad price for what you get on that router. But it was kind of a shame to see that 100 megabit. And so we had to bring it back and hang it off the G5. So there you go.
Huh. Yeah. That's a good observation that you have relatively different throughputs.
Yes.
Wireless side, USB side, and on the Ethernet side.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely worth thinking about if you're going to do it.
Yeah, it's tough because I think pretty much every Apple machine right now with a wired Ethernet port does a gigabit over copper, right?
Yeah, that's what, and that. So I just assumed it had gigabit, I never thought otherwise. But and then I thought maybe it was our cabling, so I went and looked up the specs on it, and no, it's definitely. All it has is 100 megabit.
Well, yeah, you want a Cat 5e at least, or
right,
Cat 6.
Right. So,
okay. Well, first, you found the bottle.
Our first sponsor this week is Barebone Software, BB Edit. With BB Edit, it is a text editor, but it is a text editor. I like to call it a text editor on steroids. There's so much you can do with it. You can take total control over your text. I use BB Edit every day. It's got an FTP browser in it, and you can open a bunch of files from an FTP server, edit them as if they're local. When you hit save, bam, it saves them off to the server seamlessly. Now, of course, it's had that for years, but it's a fantastic feature. It's totally seamless. The power and interface, actually, according to them, and they've done some research on this, there's no parallel on the Windows side. There's people that move to Macs just so they can code using BB Edit. It's got clippings, which are little text snippets that you can insert and manage, Apple script support, and direct integration with Unix. There's actually a command line utility. So if you're in the terminal and you want to edit a file, you just type BB Edit space and the file name, and bam, it opens up in regular BB Edit. You're not editing at the terminal. So this is BB Edit from Barebone Software at barebones.com. And with that, we move on to Scott.
Hey, John. Hey, Dave. I'm glad you're enjoying your week off. Hey, Dave, the podcast with the FileMaker folks was pretty good, except one of the things that I wanted to hear at some point, or want to hear from somebody, is, oh, by the way, this is Scott from Washington, if you haven't figured it out, is the differences between 7 and 8, or at least 8.5, and if it's really worth an upgrade, and what is it buying me to upgrade? I mean, because I already have version 7 points, whatever, and I'm not a big FileMaker user, but I do have some need for it in the near future. So I just wanted to find out from somebody, if somebody could answer, if it's worth the upgrade. And I'm not talking about from, you know, running a big business. I'm talking about running a one or two person shop and doing a few smaller things. That's all. I hope all is well. I hope you guys enjoy your week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Scott.
Dave, you didn't mention it was Scott.
I did.
If I knew it was Scott.
Oh, okay.
So, as I indicated, we use FileMaker here both for Backbeat Media and for the Mac Observer. We have some back end stuff, and I think for us the upgrade from 7 to 8, it really, you know, 8 to 8.5. There's a couple of things. The big one, of course, is support for Intel, the universal binaries, and a couple other things. But the big one for us there was that 8.5 was the universal. But from 7 to 8, yeah, it's a huge difference. There's tabs allowed in layout, so you can have one layout. In the past, you used to have to, if you wanted to emulate tabs in a layout, you had to create a layout and then duplicate it 4 times or 3 times or however many extra tabs you wanted, and then, you know, lay out these tabs manually. It was a big pain. And of course, if you changed a field location on one of the layouts, you had to then go and replicate it through it. There was no intelligence there. With tabs, you can actually have tabs in a layout, and it's totally integrated, and it works really well. The other thing that we use a heck of a lot of is the calendar dropdown. If you click on a date field, now you can have it drop down with a fully, you know, interactive calendar. You can find your dates. And the third big one for us, there's many, and we'll actually put a URL in the show notes to a PDF that John found. Thank you, John, with all these changes. But the other one that we use a lot is the email merge. Previously, it required a third-party plugin, and now you can do a lot of it with just the built-in stuff. So, yeah, it seems faster. In fact, I upgraded Greg Snyder, our VP of sales. I don't know why, but he was still on version 7 connecting to our 8 server here. And we upgraded him just last week, or week before last, to 8.5. So he went from 7 to 8.5. And he said it was like night and day connecting to the server. It must be doing something different, a little bit faster in the way that it interacts, at least across the internet, to a FileMaker server. So there you go. That's all of them.
Nice. So have you tried? So you mentioned the web viewer, yes?
Yeah, and John, we're doing some experiments with that on the back end here, and I think soon we might be able to offer you. And of course, I'm letting the cat out of the bag for all the other TMO staffers that listen. Yeah, but I'm hoping to allow all of our TMO staffers access to the FileMaker database over the web. So that's kind of it's nice. In the works. I promise.
No, it's cool because I was looking at the you're the FileMaker jock here, but I saw that feature and having web access to a application otherwise you need a client for is just very cool. Assuming they pull it off,
I think so. Yeah, So I'm hoping that, you know, by midweek this week I should have what I need to test that and you know we'll figure it out from there.
Nice.
Yeah. On to audio stuff. We kind of stumbled into an area that that apparently means a lot to a lot of you, which is great. That's why we do this. And I'll let Dave take it from here. Sorry. Did you have something to say before we let Dave take it, John?
Oh, I'm just glad that there are people like Dave that know more than us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
We're Mac geeks. Dave is an audio geek, and we'll just let him take it.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Dave Cook from the Woodstock area of New York State. I was just listening to the last podcast. You're talking about digital audio and different formats and things like that. Just to clarify one thing that John brought up about the SPDIF interface, the Sony Philips digital interface, that particular format is limited to 2 channels of audio. It's RCA connectors. Sometimes I believe you'll see a VNC connector, video type connector, but most of the time it's RCA. but it's only capable of transmitting stereo digital audio. You'll see that a lot of times on just some consumer decks, CD outs. You'll see the optical as well as the RCA SPDIF. You'll also see a Dave, you've probably seen it on some older DAT machines, where it'll be a SPDIF in and out. That's only stereo, as opposed to the optical, which can be capable of multi-channel transmission, as in what you were mentioning as far as the 5.1, 6.1 surround. Some digital audio recorders, such as ADATs, and some of the Pro Tools interfaces will have the optical ins and outs. They also call the ADAT light pipes. And that is capable of 8 channels of digital audio per cable. So if you have a light pipe out, that's 8 channels of audio out. And if you have a light pipe in, that's 8 channels of audio in. A lot of digital audio workstations, as far as 8-channel mic preamps, will have this option as well, so you can go digitally from your mic preamps into your recording system 8 channels at a time. So that's the, and then of course there's AES, which is the pro standard format for digital audio, which is transmitted down 110 ohm, talking about geeky now, 110 ohm balance lines with XLR connectors on the end. Each wire of that, though, however, each connector is only capable also of stereo audio. And then, of course, there's a TDIF, the Tascam Digital Interface, on and on. As you can probably tell, I'm an audio professional.
So absolutely.
I've been dealing with this stuff for many years. But I just want to clarify the difference between the optical and the SPDIF for you guys. All right. As usual, always great show. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you, Dave. Dave, I do have one question for you. You mentioned that ADATs are able to... And ADATs are a type of digital... ADAT, A-D-A-T. It's okay. A type of digital audio recorder, a digital audio deck, rather, that will do 8 channels to essentially to a videotape, an old, you know, a VHS-style tape. It's got to be high quality and all that, but that's what it does. It's digital recording. It was the first of the really easy to use and economically accessible home studio, you know, multi-channel recorder, multi-track recorders. So my question is, can you take an ADAT or an ADAT interface, like you said, with a strip of 8 mics or whatever, and will that plug in via the digital input connector on the Mac and do 8 channels in, or won't that work? So that's my question. So back to Dave. So, or anyone really, if anybody knows.
It makes me sort of weepy here. Just to have our listeners educate us here. I heard that. I caught. I think I grokked most of it, but still, it's like, wow, there was a whole subculture here of
absolutely.
People. It's kind of frightening because you understand. I think you probably digested about 95% of all that.
Well, actually, we were actually doing some recording, some digital recording here in the studio yesterday.
Sure.
With Ghetto Fab. Our sax player actually brought a mobile rig here to our studio because he has a Windows machine, but it's some new equipment that he got, and he wanted to play with it. And I thought, you know what, I was fine with it. It was great. I mean, because he'll now all the tracks and he'll mix them, which is awesome. So
a rig being a mixer?
Actually, he didn't use a mixer. He was just going, he had an 8-channel audio interface that was just, 8 mic pre's going digitally into his Windows PC. Actually, digitally into an M-Audio breakout box that had 2 more mic pre's, and then that M-Audio box took all 10 channels into his PC, and he was using a piece of software called Sonar on it to do it. But we did it all here in the audio attic, and we'll see how it comes out.
Windows can do that. Now, XLR, I recognize because the microphone that I'm using, a nice condenser, has an XLR going into my board. That's about all I know.
Yeah, XLR.
There's 3 wires.
That's right. Balanced signal. That's right. Yeah. All right, we got an email yesterday, I guess, from Maurice. Maurice writes, I'm a soldier currently deployed in Iraq. I'm an avid listener, and I love your podcast. I do, however, have a question about episode 102. During the cast, you briefly mentioned the audio being stuck on optical problem that you found on the net. My MacBook suffers from this. On all the forums I saw, it said to find something small and metal and probe around in the port and it should work. That's just not good advice. Here's the deal. I know the MacBook is in a confused state and doesn't require a new logic board. Why? Because when the computer starts from being completely off, I hear the startup sound. The sound lets me know that my speakers work fine. Only when I'm logged into any of my accounts and try to listen to something does the red light of doom come on. I actually created a second account to see if it was centralized to my account, but it was not. I did as much digging as I could. Is there anything else I can do? I'm thinking maybe a program which disables optical completely is the answer. I'm sure you'd know better than me. Okay, so here's my thought. Laptops deal with audio differently, and they deal with the startup sound differently from everything else. So I don't think that there's a software way of disabling the Mac to send out to the optical port. Now there might be a way of saying just ignore the switch that's on, but really the problem is this sensor in there, and you're right. All the research I found said, yeah, just stick something in there and wiggle it around, and it'll let that little door close or trip that sensor closed, and you're good. I don't like that idea either, because there's a light in there, and you're going to scratch things, and who knows what you're going to do. My thought was, for $5, and I noticed this when I was with Leighton last week down in Austin, for $5, you can get a Toslink to mini plug optical adapter. And that lets you take the standard Toslink and plug it, bam, into the mini plug. My thought is, spend the $5, buy one of these things and stick it in there. Maybe sticking it in and subsequently removing it will trip that door, sensor, whatever it is, and close it, and bam, you're back in business. That's my thought. And I'll put a link to it. I found it at Meritline. Actually, I should admit, I found it through dealsontheweb.com, our one of our sister sites.
Nice.
So, yeah.
But it sounds to me like so I think it's at a lower level, is that if that jack is in the wrong state, the Mac is going to say, huh?
Right.
So it's either going to be an analog or digital audio state if it gets stuck, which, just the phrase sticking something in there and hoping it works just makes me incredibly nervous.
I agree.
And I do have, and I haven't yet tried them on my Power Mac, because I still have the ancient Macs here, but it does have an optical interface, but yeah, that doesn't suffer from the dual use problem. So that sounds like, the other solution is, you squirt some WD-40 in there. But in this case, I probably... Well, for old school mechanical people, where my lawnmower the other day had a little problem starting up. Get some WD-40, works great.
That's cool,
but probably not for computer electronics. So
it's got stuff in it. Well, no, it's got a lubricant in it. It's not a contact cleaner. It's a mechanical lubricant. No. It's got stuff in it, dude.
But I wouldn't squirt that on my Mac.
Right.
So WD-40, keep it for your lawnmower and your household things, but not your Mac.
Yeah, but spraying some canned air in there might be enough of a force to jar something loose. I don't know. It's a thought. Our second sponsor for this show is Audible, of course, audible.com, but you need to click the link in our show notes to get your 14-day free trial and, more importantly, your one free audiobook download from Audible. So the link in the show notes is the only thing that gives you that. Audible content you can listen, of course, on your Mac, but it also integrates with iTunes, and most audio players out there support it. Of course, the iPod does. You can listen on your Trio. You can burn to CD. Lots and lots of stuff. There are a few audio players that don't work with it, but not most. They've got more than 35,000 titles to choose from, all different genres. Yes, of course, they have the tech stuff. That's why we're here. But they've also got comedy and, drama, romance, and the whole deal. Some of the textbooks that I found, How to Survive a Robot Uprising, The Search, Google and its rivals, the IWAS book, Stephen Levy's The Perfect Thing, Alan Deutschman's The Second Coming of Steve Jobs, all available at audible.com. But remember to click the link in the show notes to get your free download. It costs you nothing to try it. 2 weeks. That's audible.com. How about that hint that Parker sent in, John? Parker,
how, out that hint.
Yeah. Parker wrote, here's a tip I just stumbled across in an address book, and I'm wondering what other shortcuts might exist. Today is my friend's birthday, and I didn't have her birthday saved in my address book. So I went to her V-card and typed the word today into the birthday field. OS 10 went right ahead and supplied the right date. Is this just an obvious find, or am I missing other things? John, any thoughts about this?
I'm saying he's really missing quite a bit. No. So I you know, tested my Google foo, and I found a wonderful article at Macworld.
Okay.
Our pals at Mac, like Peter, well, he's our pal, right?
Absolutely.
Strange, but he's our pal. So anyways, no, there are, you know, and I think it's just, it comments on the design sense of the Apple designers is that in address book, I did find a little article, we'll link to it, of course, where you can type in different things that would kind of be natural. So today, yes. And so some of the things were pointed out, I think I sent it, well, I may not have sent it to you, Dave, but for example, depending on where you are in the address book, you can say today, yesterday, last week, last month, next month. Isn't that cool?
Wow.
So they have a limited set of words you can use, which are pretty natural, which will click you into that date relative to where you are at that point in time. So we will link to that. Again, it's a thing from our pals at Macworld. But I don't think there's a real standard for this. It's probably kind of a, gee, it's something I do anyways. And again, hats off to the Apple designers. I don't think, as far as I can tell, it's not documented anywhere except, you know, for publications like Macworld and ourselves that just are curious and just, I think it was an accident that somebody said, hey, what would happen if I typed it today? And they're like, look at that.
That's cool. That is, I mean, you know, as we all know, that's Apple's thing. They're one of those companies that tries to look, you know, 6 months further down the road than you are, and always trying to find stuff. But that's why we're Mac geeks, John. That's also why we own TiVos. But you know, that's a whole other topic.
I'm thinking someday my TiVo will have an Apple logo on it. Oh.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know that it's the right purchase for them business wise, but they
but it's
certainly
the right. Yes. Experience.
It is the right experience, absolutely. And, you know, maybe the iPhone will be that same experience. I'm reserving judgment until the thing comes out, but I have high hopes. And, of course, you can keep up to date with that stuff at iPhoneAlley.com, which is our great AAC converting guru, Michael Johnston's site. So he started that, I guess, about a month ago. So iPhoneAlley.com. Portable Media Expo. Go ahead. Yeah.
They're on schedule, right?
That's what they say. Yep.
That's what they're saying. They got Leopard is pushed out a bit, right?
They got FCC approval too, so that's good.
Yep, but they're, I don't know. I'm still like, I guess the big thing is Singular. Though I have Singular in Connecticut. You
I
have
do
it
too.
Up in New Hampshire. So
And it works in Vermont, in Westover,
really?
Westover, Vermont, where you and I will be this weekend. I don't know if we have any listeners there, but John and I will be there this weekend. So little R&R, because, you know, it's only been a week since we've been away, so we got to get away again. So anyway, Memorial Day weekend, Adams Farm. I think we're doing on Saturday night, John. Lisa booked us for a wagon ride up into the hills at Adams Farm, and then they'll do a big campfire thing and make s'mores and tell ghost stories. So it should be just, you know, good, wholesome fun.
There's going to be meat. There's going to be a barbecue.
Not there, but we can get meat. They sell meat.
Yeah,
we
eat meat. Yeah. Okay.
Lisa doesn't eat meat anymore. Did I tell you that?
What?
Yeah, she stopped eating meat a couple of months ago again. No, just vegetarian. She still eats fish. But after we both had that norovirus, the meat has just not appealed to her, so she hasn't been eating it. So she was vegetarian years ago too. So.
They really beat the Texan out of you, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. She'll hate me for telling this story, but she was, like I said, she was vegetarian years ago, and 3 weeks before we moved to Austin in 1995, we went down there. We flew down for a week just to rent a place to live and that sort of thing. And one night she says, oh, let's go to this barbecue place. I found this barbecue place called County Line. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. Didn't think much of it. And we get there and she orders a full rack of baby back ribs. And I looked at her. I'm like, wait a minute. You don't eat meat. She's like, oh, yeah, but this stuff, it's going to be so good. And so she, that was it. And she was not vegetarian the whole time we lived in Texas. And then now, a couple of months ago, she started up again. So
I would say best bet, if you're in Texas, you're probably going to get a good steak.
I had a good steak, last week at, a place called the Saltgrass in Northwest Austin. It's all right. It's a chain, but it's good.
Austin. Oh, Austin's the hippie part of Texas.
Yeah, there's
right?
plenty of vegetarians and some great vegetarian restaurants there. So, but I could talk about this all day. Portable Media Expo isn't all day. Well, it is, but it's not today. New Media Expo. You know, I got to change that. I just have to change it right now.
They're new.
September 28th to September 30th in Ontario, California, and we'll be there. I'm going in. I am actually changing it right now in my show template because there's no way I'm going to screw that up again. I screwed it up last week, and you weren't here to save me.
They're gonna hit you.
Yeah.
You screwed it up again?
I did. Of course I did. CashFly Hosting is where you download this show and all the others in the or many of the others in the back.
Feedback.
Media Podcast
we like
Network.
Feedback.
We do like feedback. Feedback.
iTunes. Whoever.
Yeah. You can post your reviews at iTunes. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com, 206-666-GEEK. The podcast marketplace this month has the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebone Software, one free download from Audible as long as you click the link in the notes, and PDF Pen from Smile on My Mac. I think we're done. Got anything else to tell him, John?
I don't know. Not really.
Okay. Then
vacation's hard work.
It is. So we don't know if we're going to do a show actually together in Vermont this weekend. I'll bring the blue snowball, or we'll do one when we get back. But either way, we will do one next week.
You know what I like about Vermont, Dave?
What do you like about Vermont, John?
Well, it's probably what you like. I mean, the people in Vermont just don't
get caught.
Made on them.